This is World to Win, bringing you the latest news and analysis from a socialist perspective.
So we are back with another episode of World to Win. Unfortunately, Yara has laryngitis, so that would be terrible for her to try to come on the show today, but she's here in spirit. So I'm going to do things by myself today, but that's okay because I do have actually a World to Win veteran on today. Grayson from Socialist Alternative in the U.S. helped us launch the show and now is back as a guest on the show. Full circle. Grayson, how have you been? What have you been up to? It's great to talk with you again.
Yeah, good to talk to you as well. Very excited for my World to Win homecoming. Things have been good. I have been making trip after trip to the post office to mail packages of our paper to different like places across the country because they're like, people are apparently just really taking it. We have an article in there about a student walkout that one of our members in Philadelphia led that people are just apparently really excited to read, and they should be because it's a great article. And yeah, it's that's what I've been up to lately, is going back and forth from the post office.
Yeah, and I mean, this is our Pride episode, and that newspaper has been selling like hotcakes. I've been asking people, do you want a socialist Pride paper? And they are scooping it up. So I'm glad we have more being shipped out all over. And so we also have another guest here today on this episode where we are specifically, although it's our Pride episode, we're specifically talking about trans liberation. And we have Ollie, who's from the Socialist Party in Ireland with us. Ollie, welcome to the show. What have you been up to recently?
Yeah, so mostly what I've been up to is kind of gearing up to march in Dublin Pride, which is next week. And specifically, so I'm an organizer and founder of Trans and Intersex Pride Dublin, and what we plan to do in Pride is march alongside Rosa and the Socialist Party and have specifically an anti-fascist, anti-racist block in Dublin Pride, while also kind of you know, raising awareness of trans and intersex pride, which is happening on the 8th of July, specifically is trying to bring pride back to its radical roots, and also kind of fighting for trans liberation as well. So that's what I've been up to. Yeah.
A lot of work organizing on the ground. It sounds really exciting. And we're going to get into it more throughout this episode. So just to kind of frame what we're going to be talking about today, I'm sure people have seen the attacks that have been ramping up against trans people around the world. In the U.S. specifically, there's been a flurry of anti-trans legislation. I looked even in my state in Massachusetts, which is supposedly so liberal. We have some, you know, not specifically anti-trans, but anti-LGBT legislation for what's being taught in the schools. We've seen this false debate about trans athletes, spikes in violence against trans people, which are really incited by the rhetoric of the far right politicians. And so this is indeed a bleak and tragic situation, but we are also seeing instances of a fight back and a deep radicalization amongst queer youth who are searching for the best means to resist the onslaught. And we're halfway through Pride Month currently, and it's clear around the world a new generation of queer people are reclaiming this day as one of militant struggle, which was all Ollie was talking about, and we'll get into a little bit more. So today on World to Win, we're going to discuss the situation facing trans people and how this anti-trans backlash has its roots in the crisis of capitalism. And we're also going to touch on what type of movement and political program is necessary to win actual liberation. So I want to start with Grayson, who you mentioned you were, you know, schlepping back and forth to the post office because you are on the editorial team of Socialist Alternative here in the U.S., and so, yeah, things have gotten increasingly grim here. And, you know, we probably could have a whole episode on this alone, but can you give us, you know, just some of the anti-trans legislation that's being passed in the United States?
Yeah, just to give sort of a limited sort of you could say, menu of all of the stuff that is on offer from the Right Wing today, which is just a super varied list. You already mentioned sports bans have really been the biggest feature, banning trans people from participating in sports of their gender identity. And this is really focused on trans women and girls who transphobes claim have a biological advantage. That's not scientifically accurate. We just wrote a like whole article debunking why this is the case, in part because some of their like rhetoric has started to find root among people, you know, owing to a real lack of education, just among people generally. More than half of people in the US don't know a trans person, so it's not like they're educated on this stuff. But yeah, so we wrote an article explaining why that's not actually the case. There have also been a resurgence in bathroom bans. Those were a real feature in 2016 and 17 in the US, but were resoundingly defeated. Now they're back. It's also been bans on drag performances, bans on teachers using students' pronouns if they differ from their sex assigned at birth, on using chosen names, bans on particularly gender-affirming care for minors, moving also towards banning care for adults, and on trans people being allowed to legally change their sex on their documentation. I think important just to mention that some of those laws are now being overturned in the courts, like Tennessee's drag ban for being obviously flagrantly in violation of the right to free speech. But, you know, given how thoroughly the justice system is set against working people and the oppressed, probably not all those court battles are going to go our way. And any wins for the right wing are going to create more precedent for them to continue and then write that discrimination into the law. And then also, as you already mentioned, it's really important to mention how the bans are creating this like culture of harassment, and transphobes feel really emboldened to harass anyone that they deem as looking trans, which is not just trans people, but also a lot of cis people, because you can't just tell who's trans, and, you know, not conforming to the way they think men and women are supposed to look, even children. So yeah, it's not an excellent situation here in the States right now.
It's absolutely ridiculous. I mean, just the fact that, you know, especially the amount of people who are angered by trans people being able to use whatever bathroom, play whatever sport. And like you said, the overwhelming majority of people in the US don't even know a trans person. It doesn't affect their day-to-day life. And they've made it such this huge talking point, and really this, you know, terrible attack on trans people. It's disgusting and it's dangerous. But Ollie, I'm sorry, I should have started with you before we, you know, Grayson was talking specifically about the situation in the US and, but I think it's important that we, you know, talk about globally what's happening. It's not just happening in certain countries. We are seeing a theme across the world. And so can you give us more of a general overview around the situation facing trans people worldwide?
Yeah, I think worldwide, what we're really seeing is a moral panic against trans people. This idea, you know, that trans people are something to be feared, trans people are something to be debated. We're seeing this a lot. I know we're seeing this in the UK, and that's like, it feels like that's really where it started. You know, it started with just kind of news articles kind of, you know, debating or raising questions about trans people, you know, whether or not trans people should, you know, play in sport or go to, you know, the bathrooms of their choosing. And now it's kind of being kind of drummed up and being spread that, you know, trans people are predators. Something you're hearing a lot is kind of this idea that, you know, the trans and wider LGBT community are grooming kids or indoctrinating kids into being queer or trans. And, you know, it's very similar to what was used during the AIDS crisis, especially around kind of gay men, the idea that gay men are kind of recruiting children into like this kind of gay cult. You know, it's the same kind of rhetoric we're seeing. And that this has like, you know, you can say like, you know, this like is just being seen in like the media, but also has like kind of effects kind of globally as well. You know, you've seen Hungary has passed laws under the guise of the COVID-19 pandemic, you know, banning trans and intersex people from legally changing their gender on their birth certificate. So this law came in effect in January 2021 and requires that people have the gender that they were assigned at birth be on their kind of birth certificate. But also, again, around that kind of idea that children and young people are being groomed or indoctrinated, they also passed a bill banning LGBTQ plus people from featuring in school education material and TV shows that are aimed at under 18s. And, you know, again, like what Grayson was saying around the kind of bills being kind of overthrown in court, you know, a recent law was also in Hungary vetoed by the president, which would have allowed people to kind of report children of LGBTQ plus families to authority. So it's a positive that it was, you know, vetoed by the president, but it still, you know, is a part of a worrying trend in Europe and in the US. In the likes of the UK, you know, we're seeing, you know, during what was a historic strike wave of nurses, of train drivers, and that kind of thing, you know, striking for better pay and working conditions, the UK Parliament decided, you know, to focus their energy on trans people, and use the Scotland Act of 1998 to kind of the section 30-35 of that act to block Scotland's gender recognition bill. You know, so instead of kind of making life better for working class people, they decided to get kind of go and, you know, drum up this kind of rhetoric around, you know, it'd be so dangerous for if trans people were allowed to you know, legally change the gender marker on their birth cert. So we're seeing, you know, governments passing laws restricting kind of LGBTQ plus rights. We're seeing kind of this in Poland as well, and this idea that trying to kind of restrict any kind of learning of LGBTQ plus people in classrooms, and it's something that is becoming a feature in Ireland as well.
I mean, talking about it's dangerous for people to be allowed to, you know, change their gender on their documents. What's dangerous is forcing people to live a life that they don't want to live, forcing people to use bathrooms that, you know, they don't feel comfortable using. And that's what the real danger is. Yeah. So, I mean, we're talking about how it's, you know, become more of a talking point. And I mean, even in Britain, which, you know, the most read newspaper, the Daily Mail, we've seen a huge increase of the coverage that they've had in the past few years when talking about this. Comparing the first month of each year, we see a rise from in January 2013, they had 6 articles. And then in January 2023, 10 years later, there were 115 articles. So we're seeing this huge increase in the discussion. But of course, you know, Grayson, as we're talking about this discussion, you know, in the corporate media and through these politicians, right-wing politicians, is not going in a good way. They're actually taking rights away. So I want to focus a little bit on the Republican Party. I found at, you know, our Trans Pride March in Boston, the button, we have buttons at our tables that people can buy. And the one that everyone liked the most was the one about, you know, getting rid of Ron DeSantis, you know, someone who loves to be a pioneer of, you know, canceling woke culture and, you know, all of these terrible things that he's doing. But why, in your opinion, has this become such a key aspect of the Republican Party's strategy?
Yeah, when you said that you had a most popular button, I was really hoping it was going to be our one that says the right wing is a drag. The late breaking addition to our list of buttons, but that one's my favorite anyway. No, the it's confounding, right? Like to any person looking at the situation, the fact that the Republicans have seized on this so thoroughly, you know, to, you know, without sort of you know, other things attached to it, it is really just kind of like, why are they focusing on this? And I think a caveat that needs to be added when talking about the Republicans like overly focusing on trans people, it's not because it's popular. Like this is just flagrantly like not popular among regular people. It's highly motivating to the hardest right sections of their base, particularly right-wing evangelicals. But there's actually no evidence that it helps Republicans win elections. It was actually a Supreme Court, sorry, not Supreme Court, a state, no, the state Supreme Court election in Wisconsin recently, where the Republicans spent like millions of dollars in advertising trying to claim that his opponent was going to make kids transgender, and he lost by a really compelling margin. But, you know, this sort of anti-trans hysteria is helpful in, you know, helping Republicans control the narrative and distract from substantive issues. You mentioned earlier the Daily Mail like running just a billion articles on trans people. It's kind of how kind of the same how Fox News here in the U.S. in the wake of the BLM uprising just immediately did a billion stories on critical race theory. Like that was their beat for like the entire summer was critical race theory.
This is
Well, and
funny.
it's ridiculous, Grayson, because people don't even know what critical race theory is. And you see them at these rallies, like, we're going to get rid of critical race theory. And you say, what is critical race theory? And they're like, well, I don't know, but it's bad. I mean, it's the same thing. It's like they don't even know what it is that they're upset about, but these politicians are whipping up this hate towards these things.
Yeah, it's the exact same thing as people going like, "Ah, oh, trans women can't compete in sports because they have testosterone and it's a biological advantage," as if they think that testosterone is a magical do-good at sports drug. It's just, it's ridiculous.
Exactly.
Yeah, it's nonsense science. Yeah, actually, Ollie and I co-wrote an article for our international journal, Socialist World, in, you know, our most recent issue. And an important part of that article is that division has always been capitalism, and particularly the right wing's response to social crisis. You know, like there is rampant inflation on top of what was already a rapidly increasing cost of living, disasters fueled by climate change, a pandemic that has just made all of us lose our minds like that much more. And like, you know, obviously these problems are solvable. The right wing can't solve them. And so instead of having an answer to those things, transgender people are taking over society is their answer to the question, why does everything feel profoundly off the rails? But yeah, it's not actually popular, which I think is an important takeaway.
Yes, very true. And I love the, you know, little plug you did for Socialist World, which is our journal in the International Socialist Alternative. And so, yeah, people should subscribe to it. And you can get it in the mail, which is really awesome. It has like longer articles, more theoretical, in-depth topics, as opposed to some of the shorter articles that you see on the websites of our different sections. Okay, my plug's over. Ollie, so I want to go to you. We saw some important vigils and protests after the murder of Brianna Jai, which we should be clear was a direct result of the hostile environment created by the Tories, increasingly transphobic rhetoric, right after they blocked the Gender Recognition Act in Scotland. Can you give us a little bit of a more in-depth overview of the situation in the UK and also tying that to what's been reflected in Ireland?
Yeah, so I guess we can't talk about the death and of Brianna Jai without kind of looking at the overview and looking at the situation in the UK. You know, again, this kind of toxic debate that's being brought up where trans people are kind of forced into this kind of corner where we have to debate our kind of existence. We have to debate kind of you know, why we should be allowed to transition, why we should be allowed to exist, why we should be allowed to kind of use bathrooms and p participate in sports. And also the fact that, you know, a lot of young people, especially young boys, are also being kind of, you know, radicalized online by the likes of Andrew Tate, by the likes of, you know, Joe Rogan, Ben Shapiro. The, you know, young people are kind of on one side more likely to be accepting of LGBT people, more likely to be LGBT themselves, but on the other side are kind of being radicalized by kind of misogyny and transphobia, and this does have an effect on young people, and it's kind of why we're seeing, you know, an increase in violence. So even kind of statistically, there's been a 56% rise in hate crimes against trans people in the UK. And even ILGA Europe, a LGBT organization, has directly kind of linked this kind of increase in violence against trans people with the kind of rise in hate speech and kind of rhetoric in the media as well. Because, like, when you create this boogeyman, when you create this kind of target and this fear, you know, you have people kind of preying on kind of people's ignorance. Again, like, most people don't know a trans person. Most people don't know what exactly a trans person is. And so if you create this fear, and a lot of this language that they use is so emotive. It's like, oh, they're kind of going after children, they're grooming children, and they use quite emotional language. So once you kind of, you know, create this kind of boogeyman, of course, it becomes easier to kind of incite violence against these kind of group of people. And so for a lot of people, and they specifically talk about like trans kids transitioning, and, you know, a lot of people don't know what that means. So they'll start using kind of words like mutilation, sterilization, to get this kind of fear drummed up and preying on people's fears. And a lot of it is to do with kind of even kids being allowed to learn about LGBT people. And this is something specifically is coming to play in Ireland, because so much of our primary schools, our secondary schools, are controlled by the church, are controlled by these Catholic ethos, that there has been kind of a pushback against kind of kids learning about LGBT people, even getting basic sex education. And so you're seeing also the kind of rhetoric being reflected as well from the UK, from the US, that people are trying to kind of spread lies and kind of rumours about what is being taught, what is going to be taught in schools, because we have kind of a new relationship and sex education kind of program being implemented. And actually there has been kind of a pullback from the state due to kind of these kind of these protests and these kind of the spreading of kind of rhetoric. So they've kind of stepped back from teaching primary school and secondary school students that gender is a spectrum. So they've kind of pulled back from that they're not going to teach that gender is a spectrum. A lot of people, we're seeing library workers and libraries being attacked as well, specifically in Cork and Swords. There was protests and so we're seeing kind of far right activists, you know, being escorted into libraries because they have kind of trans positive books, like This Book Is Gay by trans author Juno Dawson. And you know, this is also kind of reflected in the UK, this kind of pushback against teaching kids about trans people, teaching kids about gender identity, and that kind of thing.
And Ollie, it's not just like, I mean, of course we want books that do talk about sexuality and do talk about gender in different ways and trans people. And, you know, we want these types of books, but like the book banning has gotten so bad that they're banning books that even hint at anything that's not, you know, in these specific structures. I remember I saw in the US, in Florida, they banned one book, and it was because there was it was about a boy, and he said, "My favorite color is pink." And it talks nothing about sexuality. It talks nothing about gender. It's just this boy's talking about his favorite color.
Yeah, and you kind of see, even with the kind of bathroom bans and this kind of fear-mongering, it also affects, you know, not only trans people in a specific way, it also affects people, anyone who doesn't conform to this conventional idea of, like, what a man is, what a woman is. And even, like, with the drag bans in Tennessee, it said, you know, it defined drag as anyone wearing any clothing or makeup that doesn't, that is the opposite to the gender they were assigned at birth, you know, and that could affect someone, like someone just walking down the street in clothes that are not stereotypically feminine or masculine. And it's really kind of, how do you control that? How can you control what people wear without kind of having specific kind of boundaries around what is men's clothing and what is women's clothing? And it's just this kind of reinforcing of the gender binary, of gender stereotypes, in order to kind of keep people in control and keep people in line.
Well, I'm glad you made that connection, Ollie, because it's like sometimes people may not understand how maybe legislation like this can affect their lives. If they say, well, I'm not trans, so it doesn't affect me. It does. You know, we not only do we need to have solidarity among all working people, but we can see the effects of how down the line these types of hateful things really do affect us all. But this is just, you know, part of capitalism, and that is the way things are. So kind of transitioning in that direction of like, you know, this is capitalism. This is what happens under capitalism. This is why we need to fight to end capitalism. But yeah, Ollie, can you talk a little bit about how capitalism is at the root of trans oppression?
Yeah. So I guess I think we have to think about kind of how trans oppression kind of started, and, you know, why are trans people oppressed under capitalism? And it is inherently linked to women's oppression as well, that in order for capitalism to function, it needs workers to exploit. It needs that constant cycle of workers that will go in kind of and kind of make profits for their bosses, for these CEOs, and create that wealth in society. And, you know, how can, you know, and how are women oppressed under society, capitalist society? It's, you know, forcing them into these kind of rigid roles, specifically around kind of care and domestic work, and, you know, keeping the woman in the home, and men go off and, you know, earn the wage, earn kind of you know, earn the money to keep the kind of family unit. And, you know, trans people kind of hold up a mirror to society and say, well, you know, our gender are these kind of, the idea that a woman is naturally more caring, a man is naturally more kind of suited towards kind of work. You know, trans people say, well, no, that there isn't your gender or your, you know, how you are personally has nothing to do with kind of these kind of in like biological kind of traits, that a man can be caring, a woman can be, you know, motivated and achieve stuff. So, but like capitalism needs women to do the burden of unpaid care and domestic work. And so if you allow trans people or wider LGBT people to kind of exist in society, you know, you can't justify, you know, keeping women in the home to kind of socially reproduce those kind of next lines of workers. And so, you know, sometimes capitalism will kind of give kind of leeway and give gains. So even, for example, with trans healthcare, you know, I know in Ireland, it's so tightly restricted and gatekept that you're kind of, you know, trans healthcare more broadly kind of stigmatizes trans people. It's like, oh well, it's you're disordered, or you have you're mentally ill, so we need to have like we need to assess you and we need to diagnose you in order for you to get access to HRT, get access to gender affirming care, because, you know, if they just allowed trans people but basic bodily autonomy, you know, it would become harder to kind of justify why women need to be in the home. And so in order to get assessed, especially in Ireland, you know, you need to kind of divulge all these kind of like details about your life, about that kind of thing, in order for them to find the reason you're trans and then kind of diagnose you with something. And so, and also outside of trans healthcare, like, you know, trans people face extreme kind of job precarity, higher rates of homelessness, violence, because it needs, like, capitalism kind of needs people, needs violence, needs kind of lack of basic kind of needs in order to keep people in line. Again, like, that needs that kind of cycle of workers to kind of continue and kind of keep the cycle going, you know.
Yeah, I totally agree. I mean, just in the healthcare aspect of it, I'm like triggered. Yeah. Being an American, it's just like anything healthcare, when you think about it in capitalism, it's just like, yeah, it's just ridiculous. We don't have access, yeah, to anything that we need. Grayson, what's your take on how capitalism is at the root cause of trans oppression?
Well, I think it feels like a very abstract thing to say the phrase, like, capitalism needs division. It feels like a very abstract sentence. It's actually a really, really, like, pressing and concrete need almost at all times in order for the system of capitalism to protect itself. And, like, the same guy who has been passing, like, you know, anti-trans law after trans law in the United States, the governor of Florida, Ron DeSantis, has also, like, passed some recent, like, anti-immigration laws that are, like, you know, there's, like, an e-verify system and whatever, and, like, because of that, because many undocumented immigrants are now afraid to go to work, you have, like, restaurants and construction sites and whatever that are just empty all across the state, and it is, you know, the division is so valuable to, like, certain sections of establishment politics and to capitalism in general that, you know, they have used it to eviscerate one of the backbones of the Floridian economy, which is, you know, undocumented immigrant labor. So you can see how, like just pressing this is for capitalism pretty much at all times, and that is underpinning why anti-trans, like, bigotry, you know, continues to exist in society. I do think, like, the capitalist class also uses and has always used gender roles to reduce its burden of social work, like Ollie was kind of talking about. And I think it's like reliance on those gender roles has really waxed and waned as needed throughout history. And, like, both parents at, you know, one time or another have, like, pretty much been, like, had to work all the time. Like, the sort of single income moment of the 50s was not, like, as long as the capitalist class would really like us to believe. But in general, it's really, really useful for the system of capitalism to just be able to shove off childcare and child rearing to the family structure, and particularly on women. And transgender and queer people are living examples that these gender roles are not the natural order of things. It doesn't have to be that way.
Grayson, I just recently become a mom, and let me tell you the amount of unpaid labor that it takes to raise a family is insane. And of course, you know, society makes women feel like if they can't do it all and have a career, like, you're failing, you know? It's awful. So yeah, I mean, I totally agree with this idea that, you know, under capitalism, they're going to do whatever they can to divide and find ways to not pay people for things that we need to do to get society done. But, you know, on the show, we don't like to just talk about the problem. We don't like to just, like, analyze the facts. We like to look forward, and we like to, you know, discuss out how we can fight back and how we can change society. So, Grayson, what right now is the current stage of the movement in regards to trans liberation? And, like, are there specific instances where we've seen resistance that maybe we could build upon and strengthen?
Well, Toya, I'm going to unfortunately talk about a problem for one more minute. just one more second.
Okay.
Because I can tell you where we have not seen any resistance at all, and that's the Democratic Party in America, which has this, like, very powerful ahistorical reputation as being pro-queer. But even, you know, for what we know the Democratic Party to be, it's pretty shocking the degree to which, you know, the Democratic establishment leaders and even most progressives have stayed silent and not, you know, provided any meaningful response to this. And the one thing that the Biden administration has done is basically give ground to the right wing by issuing new Department of Education rules that basically read as a how-to manual for how to legally ban trans athletes, which they amazingly enough posed as a compromise. So, you know, I think...
Wait, what do you mean a how-to guide? Like, the Democratic Party supposedly, you know, supports the rights of working people. Like, what, how are they making it, you know, easier? And what are they explaining to the states on how to do this?
So the long and short of it is, I think by this time, about 22, maybe in the early 20 numbers of states have banned trans athletes from participating in sports, you know, alongside, you know, teams of their own gender identity. The new Biden Department of Education rules that they rolled out, which I'm not sure if they're totally in effect yet, but this is what they proposed, basically make those statewide bans unenforceable. They're saying you can't ban trans athletes on a statewide level, but if you really want to, you can ban trans athletes on a district and on a school level.
They're giving them the key to the loophole.
Exactly. They tell you exactly how to ban trans athletes. And what's worse, they actually provide language in that they basically provide a bunch of reasons why it's okay to ban trans athletes, like specific situations. One of those situations that they lay out is if a cis athlete's scholarship would be threatened by the trans athlete's presence, which is in most cases unprovable. But it is also just like, I don't think we can swear on this show. It's so screwed on so many levels.
Well, here's a thought. How about university and college is free? Then nobody needs a sports scholarship to go. We could just let everybody go because that's just what we should do. But, you know, whatever, just a thought. But okay, Grayson, I need to get to the positive. Where's the fight back? Where's the movement? What stage are we at now?
So I think the real, like, leadership that has emerged at this stage is mostly among, like, high school students. Like, young people and students have been the most involved in the fight back, and there have been small but, like, consistent student walkouts. And students are also, like, generally speaking, able to mobilize a considerable section of their classmates and, their non-trans classmates and often even their teachers. We recently did an interview with some student activists in Kentucky who organized a high school walkout after being blatantly lied to by their state representative, not that they were ever going to tell the truth to them. But yeah, they were talking about the experience, and this is Kentucky, and it's not even one of the bigger like cities in Kentucky. It's a smaller suburb. And they were talking about how, yeah, there were a couple teachers who, like, crumpled up their flyer and threw it away, but there were, like, a number of teachers who also participated in the walkout alongside them. Like, they had an in-school rally during their free period, and then they walked out after class. And they said, like, how, like, surprised but unsurprised they were by that level of support, which I think is really encouraging and shows, yeah, the need to connect this to, like, teachers and nurses who, like, not only are deeply affected by all of this legislation that could criminalize them for doing their jobs properly, but whom also have, like, the power to significantly shut down industry to protest these things. So there's the beginnings of something that, you know, could be a tool for a much bigger fight back than what exists right now.
Well, that's so inspiring, especially coming from young people. Leave it to the high schoolers to say, you know what, we're going to organize ourselves. We're going to fight back. Not having illusions in the undemocratic party, who obviously is not going to do what it takes to, help working people. But Ollie, I'm sure a lot of what Grayson has been talking about is relevant for you as well. You know, you mentioned at the beginning of the show that you've been organizing trans and intersex pride in Ireland, and I'm super excited to hear how that's been going.
Yeah. So we are kind of organizing for our fourth trans and intersex pride march, and there has been a real good like buzz about it. People, I think, especially in the context of all these attacks on trans people, both kind of in Ireland and globally, people want to fight back. People want to get organized and get involved, because I think people kind of know that something needs to happen. And I think trans and intersex pride and more kind of grassroots organizations are pointing the way forward. So we are explicitly anti-capitalist. We don't invite corporations. We don't take money from corporations. We also don't kind of invite government parties to our march as well. So we specifically have carved ourselves out as kind of a more radical pride, bringing pride back to it's the radical roots of protest. I know kind of pride in the UK started from kind of Stonewall, but also in Ireland, kind of pride also started from that radical kind of protest. Specifically after the death of Declan Flynn, a gay man in Fairview Park, his murderers were kind of let off kind of scot-free because they were just cleaning the park of queers, and that was a direct quote. And that started Dublin Pride as a protest. And so what we're doing is saying, you know, we want to continue this kind of tradition of pride as being a protest.
But you don't invite these corporations that for 1 week a year put a rainbow flag on their Instagram handle?
Yeah, especially the likes. It is almost sickening to see Google and Amazon at Dublin Pride and being like it's so disheartening and disconnecting from like real like queer people's lives, especially in Ireland. And that was the reason, kind of one of the reasons why we were started, was that there was a growing kind of anger about these big corporations with like big floats, and that pride had really lost its heart, really lost kind of what it should be about, which is the community. And I think it's quite important to mention that Trans and Intersex Pride was actually founded in 2018, just after the repeal of the Eighth Amendment, which banned abortion in Ireland. So it was after this kind of historic win abortion was no longer banned in Ireland. And what we specifically said on that day was like, if you care about bodily autonomy, if you care about, you know, women and pregnant people being able to choose whether or not they keep their pregnancy, you should come to Trans Pride and say that it should be a trans person's choice or decision to have control over whether or not, you know, they transition and how they transition, rather than kind of these transphobic, you know, doctors dictating whether or not someone is trans enough. So directly linking it to the fight for abortion and the fight for abortion rights as well.
I love it. I love the ability of, you know, these demands to really overlap across the working class. I think it's super important. But I, something you said, Ollie, reminded me, Grayson, do you remember in the US, what was this? Was this last year or the year before when they recognized Juneteenth, which is the day the last slaves, you know, the day they became free. They recognized Juneteenth, and Walmart, the largest employer in the US, comes out with t-shirts that say, "It's the freedom for me." Like, come on. Did you hear about that?
I completely missed that, but that is, I mean, considering what Walmart pays, they have very little room to talk about slavery at all.
Legit.
It's a rough, you know, comparison for them.
It's just so funny how these corporations just like to take something that workers, you know, are using to actually fight back, and then they, you know, try to bury it to make money off of it. So I have one last question about the struggle for trans liberation, you know, moving in this positive direction. Again, we want to talk about what we need to fight back and where we're going and what this future could look like. So Grayson, why is the struggle for trans liberation bound to the struggle for socialism?
I think watching the development of this sort of anti-trans hysteria over the last like 3 or so years, I mean, you can just absolutely see how people's inherent, like, instinctive mistrust of the capitalist system gets warped into like this weird anti-trans bigotry. They say like, oh, you're not transgender, you've been deceived by the pharmaceutical corporations, so you pay them for hormones for the rest of your life. I'm definitely transgender, but we are getting exploited by pharmaceutical corporations every single day. Like, we all are. We live in a system where we can only treat people for conditions or cure them of disease if somewhere a billionaire is going to turn a profit off of it. We can't live like that. It's ridiculous and nonsensical. And it sort of points to the fact that every oppression that trans people face, like, doesn't just come from prejudices that are instilled and reinforced by the capitalist system. It's predicated on the fundamental lack of power that working class people have in all of our lives. If you take away a trans person's right to decide how a doctor treats them and what they get to do with their own body, there's nothing stopping insurance companies from deciding you don't get to treat your cancer. You're not well enough to make that decision. You're too sick. We can't decide how to treat you because you're not an accurate, you know, representation of your own experience. You know, a socialist movement, a movement for like a genuine socialist world, is necessarily going to take up issues of, you know, self-expression and the right to be yourself in public. And the only world where trans people aren't like constantly being, you know, interrogated about how we know that we are the way that we are is a socialist one. And I really stand by that.
That's awesome. Thanks, Grayson. Ollie, your turn. What's your quick pitch for how trans liberation is bound to the struggle of socialism?
I guess, like, we all kind of benefit from trans rights, like, that we benefit all from kind of women's rights. It's like the idea that, you know, you get to kind of decide, you know, what happens to your own body. You get to decide how you want to dress, how you want to express yourself, and that no one you shouldn't face any oppression or violence for just kind of wearing the clothes you want to wear, being the person you want to be. But also the fact that, you know, trans liberation can happen under a system that is so driven by profit to the point where the system will put profit over people's lives. You know, we're seeing this with the destruction of our planet, that the fact that the climate crisis can be solved under capitalism because, you know, these big billionaires, the 1%, will literally bleed the planet dry just to get that profit, just to get that as much money as it can. And so how do we expect trans people or queer people to live our lives the way we want to on a under a system that will literally kill the planet for any kind of monetary gains necessary? And so the idea that trans people can be able to freely live our lives under capitalism is just, it's not something that can happen. So that's kind of my quick pitch for any trans person looking for a way forward.
Thanks so much, Ollie. It's really important that we do talk about a way forward. You know, we don't want to just talk about how bad it is. We know how bad it is, but making these connections and understanding where this oppression comes from and how we can fight back is so important. I want to thank you both for coming on the show today, Grayson. It was great talking with you again. Ollie, loved meeting you, and I hope to have you guys back real soon.
Yeah, thanks so much for having us. This has been great.
Yeah, thank you so much for inviting us.
Thanks, guys.
And now it's time for the shout out of the week. This week, our shout out goes to the 4 Socialist Alternative members who were recently elected to the National Executive Committee of the Unison Trade Union in Britain on a fighting program for a more combative and democratic union. And it's relevant to this episode because our members in Unison have passed motions calling the workers' movement to actively fight attacks on trans lives, which is a potentially powerful force to combat transphobia and indeed all forms of oppression. So shout out to those members. Keep up the great work. And I can't wait to hear about your update. Thanks for tuning in this week, and we will see you guys next time.
This is World to Win. Like us on Facebook and follow us on Instagram, because there's a lot to do and we have a world to win.
When they fight!
We win!
When they fight!
We win!
When they fight!
We win!
Solidarity!